Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Hello and welcome. It's Katie Hannan.
And Colm O'Mungain here on today's Drive Time. Coming up,
Volodymyr Zelensky comes to town. What does he want and what will he say?
We'll bring you live coverage of his speech to the Oireachtas and full analysis on what it all means.
Past the parcel, John Cook reports from a revamped mail centre getting ready for Christmas.
Ophelia going down a storm in the list of baby names. What else are new arrivals being called in 2025?
Will tasers change the face of Irish policing?
And why it's really time to change those bedsheets.
You can WhatsApp us on 0870 32 32 32, text us on 51551 or email drivetime@rte.ie.
Now we're looking at live pictures from outside Leinster House, the Merrion Square entrance there. There are several black cars parked outside, parked there because, of course, Ukraine's President Zelensky pulled up in just the last few moments, was greeted at the door of Leinster House by the House Superintendent and inside the hall at the back to be greeted by the Ceann Comhairle and introduced to party leaders and also leaders of the various Seanad factions, leaders, of course, of the independent groupings there as well. It follows, of course, his speech just after 2 o'clock outside of government buildings, and he addressed a number of issues in his speech. If you missed it, we'll give you a recap on some of the areas. He called on Ireland to use its influence on EU accession. Presumably he also wanted Ireland's influence to extend to the Irish diaspora in the US as well, where he's seeking support, and obviously the debate there. We will be going there later in the programme, but the debate over how to help Ukraine, or in some quarters even whether to help Ukraine, is of an existential interest to him. He encouraged us to secure financial support and reparations, also Irish support in keeping sanctions in place, and interestingly also saying Ukraine was doing everything for people to be able to return home. We might touch on that point later, and stated, I think, on several occasions, Katie, that Ukraine was grateful to Ireland. That point made a number of times.
Yes, indeed. If there was a speech cloud or a sound cloud made, grateful and thank you would be two of the main words in it. Let's check in now with our political correspondent Micheál Lehane, who is standing by for us there at Leinster House. And Micheál, it was a packed schedule already for the President and Mrs. Zelensky.
It was, and I suppose the formal bit of it beginning with that courtesy call to Áras an Uachtaráin to meet President Connolly, and a fairly extensive message written in the visitor's book by the Ukrainian president expressing gratitude for the steadfast support of Ireland and also thanking the country for the shelter provided to Ukrainian people here, and a hope that links between the two countries can be strengthened. And I suppose to that end, you saw further government support today with the cabinet signing off on another 125 million in aid for Ukraine. And then there is a plan in place now bringing up to 2030 to strengthen links between the two countries. And that will have some economic elements to it too. And there'll be a meeting on that after this address in the Dáil Chamber, which will take place in the next while. I suppose the central message from Volodymyr Zelensky has been clear about what is necessary to secure peace in his country. It's about the sensitive points around territories, obviously, about seizing those Russian assets in Europe and having the money paid to Ukraine to make up for the war damages, and then to provide security guarantees, he said, which is essential. People cannot leave the army, return to their works and live with the ongoing fear that Russia could invade again.
Yes, and he was asked at that press conference after his meeting with Taoiseach Micheál Martin about that meeting that's happening within, I think, within the next hour now in Moscow between Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner and Vladimir Putin.
Yes, a fairly frank and measured response, saying that he needed something solid and specific before dealing with that. And if something was to emerge along those lines, something concrete, really, I think that addressed those three points that he touched on repeatedly. Then he said they would be in a position to meet with the American side on that. But I think even though he began that speech by saying there is a greater chance than ever before to try and find peace, it does have to address those three key areas. And until that happens, it cannot be peace at any cost.
Yes, and we understand he will shortly begin his address to the Oireachtas. What are we expecting from that, Micheál?
I think, again, it will be those points, also that sense of gratitude that has been expressed throughout the day to Ireland, and he making it clear that Ireland has a strong presence, not just here, but globally as well, and how that can be relied upon. And a sense that he has touched on a few times that Ireland is doing this because they know it is the right thing to do and they can feel it. They're not just acting on solely political grounds here. There is a sense of belief in the purpose with which the government is pursuing this. I think we're going to hear those themes once again.
And I know as well he was asked in that press conference whether he was worried that maybe the support for Ukrainians in Ireland was waning because some of the supports have been lessened in terms of accommodation and the period of time we're offering accommodation to Ukrainians now. But he was anxious to say he was brought up to believe that you said thank you and the size of the gift really wasn't what mattered.
Yeah, he sidestepped that really, as did the Taoiseach. But of course, that is a reality. Things are quite different now to when he addressed the Dáil Chamber via video link back in April 2022. There was more state accommodation and there were different welfare entitlements that have all been pared back along the way. Nonetheless, the sense of commitment overall to Ukraine, I think, has been reiterated today.
I suppose when this visit was organised, he couldn't have known that possibly one of the most crucial meetings of this entire war would be happening at the same time in Moscow. So he'd be forgiven for having his mind elsewhere as this afternoon goes ahead today.
Yes, and I mean, there was this morning as well that update from the Ukraine delegation. So Dublin is playing a key part in what is a critical juncture, really, in possibly a defining period for Ukraine. So this is a pitch, really, to those Irish politicians, but also in many ways, as the world looks on, this does have a fairly significant international audience as well, judging who will be seeking to judge just how the Ukrainian president is viewing developments elsewhere in the world. So it is a pivotal moment.
And of course, asked as well today, the Taoiseach, about what part or what role Ireland will play after the war. If a ceasefire is agreed, if that war is over, will there be Irish troops involved in peacekeeping in Ukraine?
Yes, again, Ireland has been fairly reserved in their view in that, an open mind perhaps that if it came to just monitoring, that there could be a role in relation to that. But I think what you will see, though, is a level of ongoing support. That plan that was agreed by Cabinet today goes all the way up to 2030. The Taoiseach saying that peace will come to Ukraine and that Ireland will be there supporting them in that new phase as well. I suppose some of the next key moments too that could have an Irish involvement will probably be at European Council level when it comes to those Russian assets and when it comes to their distribution or not to Ukraine as a result of the war damages. But of course, no unanimous agreement on that at the moment, a particular stance being taken by the Belgian government in particular, but something that Ireland has a very clear view on.
Yeah, and that was expressed again today. Overall, what is he hoping to come away from here with? Is there anything he particularly needs to have heard from this visit?
Well, I think it is, again, that reiteration of the steadfast support and I suppose that pledge, too, that Ireland will work hard to try and progress and swiftly ensure that Ukraine does make progress when it comes to the accession talks to join the European Union. They seem to be two of the key measures. And I suppose, too, it must be said that as of now, there is still a need for Ireland to continue to provide shelter, as it's been called, for people who are fleeing the war in Ukraine and to ensure that that continues to happen. And there is a slightly different context to that when it comes to the paring back of some of the conditions and some of the welfare entitlements. And a sense, too, that there has at certain points, even in recent weeks, reached a crisis point around finding such accommodation.
OK, we're also with that speech is due to begin shortly, but we're joined, as I say, in studio by Scott Lucas, Professor of American Studies and International Politics at UCD, and Eimear McCauley from the journal.ie. Good afternoon to you both, and thanks for joining us. Scott, to you first on this. As Katie was asking Micheál there, little did Vladimir Zelensky realise that this visit would be coinciding with a crucial meeting in Moscow. And there did seem to be a real sense of tension about that as he spoke at that press conference at government buildings. He said, we spoke to Steve, meaning Steve Witkoff, Trump's envoy. We await today's results. And then he said, if we feel there is something to talk about, we will meet. So very much his jury is out on the outcome of this. A sense of trepidation, maybe?
It's trepidation, and it's the uncertainty that there are two proposals that are in play here. Now, one proposal is the European counterproposal that I'll mention in just a minute, and that's what will be discussed between Zelensky, the Taoiseach, and other European leaders. The first proposal is effectively an ultimatum to Kyiv. Russia had been developing the plan since April, but from mid to late October, the Kremlin worked with Steve Witkoff, as you mentioned, the real estate developer, and Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. And the key meeting was in Florida, probably at Witkoff's private club in the last week of October. It was with Vladimir Putin's top economic advisor, a man named Kirill Dmitriev, who's been working with the Trump camp since 2017.
Also a property developer.
The property developer, head of Russia's sovereign wealth fund, head of investment decisions, including, and this is going to be key, in rare earth minerals and in the energy sector. Because the deal that the Russians offered the Americans is, look, if you can help us get an end to our invasion, we're going to have joint U.S.-Russian energy projects in oil, in rare earth minerals, in manufacturing, in AI. And those deals have been discussed for several months, including by people close to Trump, a couple of his major donors, including by ExxonMobil, the leading U.S. oil company. And the Russians have been using this as a lever with the Americans. The deal? But to get to that point, you have to make Ukraine give up this vital part of the Donetsk region in the east of the country.
And there is also a factor. The Wall Street Journal has been doing massive reporting on this in the last week. There's also a plan to tap into that $300 billion of frozen assets that we've heard about so much today, and that they could be used as part of these investment plans between Russia and America.
Yeah, so Russia has to spend $100 billion into this so-called Ukraine Recovery Fund. But under their proposal with Kushner and Witkoff, backed by the Vice President J.D. Vance, the U.S. gets 50% of the profits, however that's defined, from the recovery fund, and a clause which hasn't been noticed as much, this question of security guarantees for Ukraine. If there are security guarantees for Ukraine, the U.S. will be compensated for those guarantees.
So, pay for play.
Pay for play. Now, that's a term I wouldn't hate to use. Let's just call it a business deal, because Donald Trump is a businessman. Witkoff and Kushner are businessmen. Let me advance that just a bit, though, because I said there were two proposals. This proposal that was presented as Trump's peace plan, even though it's the Russian plan, it went to Geneva just over a week ago. The day before the talks in Geneva, the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio undermined it. He undermined it by briefing a group of congressmen who were at a security conference in Canada, who came up and told the media, one after the other, this is a Russian plan. This isn't our plan. When Rubio carved out that space, the next day at Geneva, the Europeans could come in, having talked to the Ukraine, and said, and we heard a bit of it there, the first priority is a ceasefire. We'll discuss territory, economic arrangements, investment arrangements, but after the ceasefire takes place, that throws the ball back into Putin's court. Because every time that Ukraine and Europe have set that priority of a 30-day ceasefire, Putin has not only refused it, he has stepped up his attacks, air attacks and ground attacks.
And we heard that echo, Dimer, by Micheál Martin as well. He said there's a ceasefire required, there's a peace settlement required, and then he spoke of those funds, not as some kind of a pool from which Russia and America could tap into, but as something that would be used as a punishment and as a deterrence.
Yeah, he said that that's crucial, you know, to ensuring that this doesn't happen again in the future. And Zelensky talked about that again today. I think it was Paul Cunningham who asked him, you know, are the options on the table for you here a bad deal now or a worse deal later? And he was saying, I'm thinking more long term. I'm thinking about whether in the next 10 years we see another invasion of Ukraine.
A third invasion, as he was saying, yeah.
Yeah, and Micheál Martin said, you know, that it's vital that it's not just the European taxpayer who's footing the bill now for the reconstruction of Ukraine. And obviously there are going to be massive concerns that Donald Trump is looking at this as a business deal. You know, he could potentially benefit not just from 50% of the profits of the reconstruction of Ukraine, but, you know, compensation for security guarantees. So like what we saw with Gaza, he's looking at how he stands to gain financially as well. And, you know, we heard a lot of interesting details about that in the Wall Street Journal piece that you mentioned, which we think were probably actually leaked from the European side. So there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes here.
There is. And just to let people know, we're watching pictures now, live pictures from inside Leinster House. We have Ciaran Corla, Verona Murphy there standing side by side with President Zelensky. And they're just, as we speak, about to enter the Dáil chamber. So we'll be going to that speech in a moment.
That's it. They've just turned off the cameras on that and telling us that they'll resume shortly. The other thing that was interesting from the point of view of the domestic audience, Eimear, in that press conference afterwards and questions were being thrown to them was, oh, the cameras are back on again and the Dáil, there's not an empty seat in the house. They're all rising to their feet now. And we would expect that the people we saw coming up the stairs, led by the Ciaran Corla, are going to come down the stairs and into the chamber, and the applause has begun.
And so a standing ovation there for the president.
Vladimir Zelensky's speech in hand, greeting people as he makes his way just along the gallery behind where the TDs are seated and making his way to, of course, ultimately where he's going to make that speech.
Everyone taking their opportunity to shake President Zelensky's hand as he walks, he makes his way past them there.
Yeah, there will be huge interest in what he has to say around Europe. I know partner organisations of RTÉ and the European Broadcasting Union will have people here busy feeding them both the live speech and subsequent clips of the speech, as is generally the courtesy protocol when something happens on the Irish patch. And he's coming down the stairs
slowly because everybody wants to shake his hand. But he's almost in.
Gary Gannon having a quick word there. Holly Kearns.
Holly having a laugh.
A laugh there. That's. We've got there more from another few couple of members of the Social Democrats there as well. He's passing by Minister James Lawless and another handshake with people are stepping out of their seats to greet him. There's great excitement, obviously, to get the handshake with Volodymyr Zelensky. And Verona Murphy
introducing him as he goes along.
Yeah, and hastening his progress towards the podium where he's going to get up and make this address.
I think we can.
So just about to be introduced now by the Ciaran Corla.
Extended standing ovation.
To be seated, please. Thank you for your luck. Your Excellency, President Zelensky, Taoiseach Tánaiste, members of Dáil and Seanad Éireann, Ambassador Jurasco, distinguished guests and friends of Ukraine, a Uachtaráin Zelensky, Tá fáilte mhór leo a bhí deoch láin, Ionad Parliament nár siúnta na hÉireann. Is mór an meas atá a ghuinn ort féin, agus ar bhuintir na húchráin. Agus an tasavacht, agus an ding valtacht, atá léirithe guibh, chun mhór tír a chosint an onróthair. President Zelensky, you are most welcome to Leinster House, our National Parliament. I would like to also welcome the First Lady. Mrs. Zelenska is a woman who has become a symbol of Ukrainian dignity and resilience, and you are a model for women worldwide. We gather in solidarity and admiration for you and your people. War is a human tragedy. It destroys lives. It uproots families and leaves scars that endure for generations. War is never a solution, and Ireland knows this truth. Our own history teaches us that dialogue, however difficult, can bring peace. The Good Friday Agreement was born from decades of pain and division. Yet it proved that even the deepest wounds can heal when people choose negotiation over violence. And that lesson gives us hope for Ukraine. Today, we meet in a solemn acknowledgement of the ongoing war against your country. An illegal attack on a sovereign nation, an assault on international law, a violation of human dignity. Every missile and bullet has shattered lives. Parents mourn children lost. Families endure displacement and uncertainty. Futures have been stolen. And no words can capture the suffering of your people. We watch in horror as drone attacks escalate, as your country's infrastructure is ravaged, at acts that defy all principles of humanity. The global community must stand united in condemning this war. We must continue to provide refuge. We must provide humanitarian aid. But most of all, we must demand accountability for war crimes. As a militarily neutral country, Ireland is not and never will be morally neutral in the face of atrocity. Our neutrality is a commitment to peace, not indifference. Together with our EU partners, Ireland will stand firm behind Ukraine to ensure Russia ends its aggression. The Irish, who themselves have lived through the trauma of immigration and war, have opened their hearts and their homes to the thousands of Ukrainians who now live and work among us. Your people enrich our communities and share their culture, even though their hearts are still with Ukraine. Ireland's journey to peace was long and arduous, but it succeeded because people preserved in the belief that peace is the only solution. The same possibility exists for Ukraine. World leaders would do well to reflect on the powerful words of John F. Kennedy, an American president born of Irish immigrants, a man whose family left the very shores of New Ross, my home constituency in Wexford. As he declared with unwavering conviction in his inaugural address, let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. President Zelensky, we hope and look forward to the day that Ukraine can celebrate peace. We stand with the Ukrainian people in solidarity, in friendship, and in hope. May your courage and the strength of your people lead to a just and lasting peace. Thank you. I now invite you to adjourn.
The Count Court of Verona Murphy, shaking hands to President Zelensky, who is just approaching the podium now. People remaining seated because they want him to be able to begin immediately and afford him a bit of silence as he gets his notes in order.
Thank you so much.
Here he goes.
Ken Corlim, Kohirla, deputies and senators, dear friends, dear Ireland, thank you for your attention to Ukraine and for the fact that Ireland has truly stood the test of time. Thank you for providing home and protection to our people when they needed it most once the war broke out back home. while in some societies the fatigue from news about the war is growing, we do not feel that your voice, the voice of Ireland, is turning quieter. Thank you. Our peoples, Ukrainian and Irish, are among the few in Europe who spent centuries fighting for the right to remain themselves. And now, for nearly 4 years of Russia's full-scale war against our people, our children, the most devastating war for freedom in Europe since World War II, Ireland has stood firmly and clearly for our independence and for a just end to this war. So thank you for your steadfast support for these years of standing with us. And thank you for not losing faith in us. Just as we do not lose faith that the day will come when we will welcome all our friends to Ukraine in peace, and when we will welcome home all our people who were forced to flee back to a peaceful Ukraine back home. And we are working to make it real. This morning here in Ireland, our team delivered a full briefing following the meetings in the United States, and we are fully engaged in negotiations, and we are only stepping up our efforts. Our team is now looking ahead to next very important meetings. Today, Ukraine is closer to peace than ever before, and there is a real, real chance. But we must seize this chance fully, the whole world, not just one of the another powerful country. Ukraine wants peace. Ladies and gentlemen, one strong country can start a war. Another strong country can help to stop the war. But to restore justice and defend what's right, we need a community, a world made up of many different nations. It is the community of nations that decides, united by shared sentiments, shared aspirations, a shared desire for justice. It is a community of nations that makes peace truly lasting. Geographically large or small, politically influential or playing a different role, economically powerful or not, when these different voices stand together on the side of justice, on the side of free people, there is only one possible outcome: peace, and justice must prevail. When you have a true community of nations on your side, you cannot be crushed and your rights can be restored. No one can break the world alone, not even Russia, not even with its few buddies. No one can lie to the entire world forever, not even Putin. No one can stand against everyone else. And that is the truth, but also true, one can inspire everyone else. And that is why Ukraine is fighting for every voice in the world, for every community in every region. We are trying to reach every heart, to answer every doubt, to counter every accusation with facts. And we are searching, and we are searching for and finding friends wherever we can. We have managed to unite the majority of the world, and that unity has become our main weapon in protecting life. And we have kept the world's attention, and that gives us time to resist Russia's attempts to destroy us. We are involving everyone we can in diplomatic efforts, and that is the best path forward. It is a great honor for me to stand here today in a country that understands the price of freedom, understands better than many, many in Europe, better than many, many in the world, and that shares our belief that every voice counts, every nation matters. Ireland is doing so much to help others understand why it is important to stand together, to remain a community based on shared values. Thank you for that. And we will continue to coordinate with you and with everyone who can help and to inform all those who can influence the outcome so that one day we can achieve what many still believe to be impossible. Not just silence instead of bombs, not just clear skies instead of Russia's drones and missiles, not just a pause between strikes, but lasting peace, guaranteed security and true justice. Human memory is often short and attention can be fleeting. So please remind the world every time it is needed that Russia's invasion of Ukraine is a criminal, an unprovoked act of aggression which cries for justice. It happened for one reason only, because Russia wants to treat Ukraine as its property and Ukrainians as if they belong in its backyard, like livestock, so that no politician in Europe or somewhere else falls into amnesia, forgetting everything we have achieved together through our defense. And I urge you to oppose any decision that weaken pressure on Russia for this war, as long as war and occupation and the propaganda of hatred continue. All the pressure on Russia must remain in place, so that Russia does not believe it will be rewarded for this war with stolen Ukrainian land or kidnapped Ukrainian children. Please continue supporting all efforts to make the tribunal for Russia's aggression a reality, so that one day it truly begins its work, and so that Russian killers cannot freely travel the world as if they have done nothing wrong. We must protect the unity that has existed since 2022, a unity of different nations united in the protection of life and justice. And we are speaking about the future. There is no good future for Europe without this unity. Ukraine wants to stand together with those whose history, values, struggle reflect our own. We want to stand alongside Ireland in the European Union as equals. And I'm confident that this will happen. Europe cannot run away from its own values. It must stand up for them. And Ukraine is doing exactly that today on Europe's behalf. Ladies and gentlemen, dear Ireland, please remember your voice matters. From Ireland's vote at the United Nations to the words in your media, from your thoughts here in Dublin, to every home in the global Irish community around the world. That's millions of people who can influence hundreds of millions more. When the most powerful apply pressure, the global community helps guide that pressure in the right direction. Just as there is no capital in the world unaware of what St. Patrick's Day is, There should be no capital that does not know that the Irish, together with the Ukrainians and many other nations, are united for real peace. A peace without humiliation and based on something truly real, on shared values. And those values are not business as usual, not appeasement of killers, not turning a blind eye to what has happened. Among those values is this: the aggressor must be held accountable for what was done. Please take an active role in making the tribunal for this aggression a reality, not just joining, but pushing, working, insisting that justice must begin with accountability. Please continue to advocate for every form of sanctions against Russia, and it's time for Russian assets to serve the cause of peace, to help defend and rebuild Ukraine. This is a long overdue decision, and it must be implemented. And please call on everyone in the world to help return all the children abducted by Russia and all the prisoners still held in Russian jails and camps, many of whom have been there not just since 2022, but since 2014, when Russia launched its hybrid war against us and occupied our Crimea. This has gone on far too long to simply close our eyes and turn the page on Russia. Without a just peace, hatred will not fade. It will continue to smolder and provoke new and new violence. History has seen this before, and this time it must be different. We need real peace. Help us achieve it and never lose your faith in Ukraine. Thank you. Thank you, Ireland. Glory to Ukraine. Thank you.
So President Zelensky, just as you can hear, getting another standing ovation as he concludes that speech there. All the eyes of the world on Dublin this evening. President Zelensky thanking Ireland for its support, for its protection, for speaking up, making the historic comparison that Ireland understands the century of struggle. It's, he said, for Ukraine's part, it was stepping up its efforts in negotiations with the US, saying that one strong country can start a war, one strong country can help to stop it, but it's going to take a community of nations to make peace truly lasting.
Yeah, I counted 10 thank yous in that very short speech. Reaching out as well, calling on the global Irish community to stand with Ukraine, which is a really important point. And clearly saying, just as no capital in the world doesn't know what St. Patrick's Day is, no capital in the world should not be aware of how Ireland is standing with Ukraine in this. And very, very strong right through that, calling for the oppressor must be held accountable, that those Russian assets must be used to rebuild Ukraine. But again and again saying, no, Russia cannot be let get away with this.
And we're going to come to our guests in studio in just a moment. But we do want to get reaction from Ukrainians to what President Volodymyr Zelensky had to say. And our reporter Una Kelly is standing by. Una, you've been speaking, you've been with Ukrainians who've been listening to that speech. What's the reaction been like?
Yes, Colin, we're just here in the Art of Coffee shop in Dublin city centre. That's part of a chain of shops run by Ukrainian man Ruslan Macharsky. And we've been here over the past hour chatting and watching that speech. And I'm joined here by Pavlo Bogachenko. He's a lawyer, and Anna Creech. She's a businesswoman. They've both been in Ireland for several years now. Pavlo, what stood out to you about that speech?
Thank you so much. Given the powerful symbolism, importance of this visit to Ireland and the parallels Ukraine has with Ireland, Ireland being built and supported by diaspora, my impression would be, what's the next step for us as Ukrainians, millions abroad, including in Ireland, to support Ukraine. In our organization, we support humanitarian relief efforts, we send humanitarian aid, we established Ukrainian Irish Chamber of Commerce. I, as a lawyer, work on a project supporting Ukraine's reconstruction and EU accession, and that's millions of other Ukrainians. But the broader questions, what else we can do to support just peace, to support Ukraine's recovery and Europeans' future? That's my impression.
And that question of EU accession is really important to you?
Yeah, absolutely, because as Ukrainians, we feel European, we feel that we belong and welcome in Europe, and we want to be part of European family and carry on.
And we appear to have lost the line to Una there. Eimear, one of the other themes that Volodymyr Zelensky said, he said it outside of government buildings and he said it just there in his speech in the Dáil, maybe aware of the political debate that's in Ireland at the moment and some of the changed circumstances, but hoping to bring Ukrainians home to a peaceful Ukraine. Speaking to both audiences there, but definitely aimed at an Irish political audience.
So I think Zelensky's pragmatic and he knows how much he depends upon, you know, the will of the people in all the EU member states. You know, he talked there about the fatigue that some people feel in different countries. He's aware that it's a lot to take on 120,000 people in the country. And, you know, he was asked if he was aggrieved over the fact that we've cut welfare supports. We've cut the amount of time that we have people in state accommodation here. And he said that he's grateful for any kind of help. So you get the sense that he understands that and that he was kind of advertising the fact there we will be looking to bring people back home, so kind of a message of reassurance to people, I guess, on that end. But you know, there's also the question there of, you know, if EU citizenship is on the way for all those people who are from the occupied parts of Ukraine, you know, going home is not going to be a simple thing. And if the version of the deal comes to pass that Donald Trump has put forward, then a lot of the people that we have here whose homes are already destroyed, you know, would be looking at going back to other parts of Ukraine. So they're in a really difficult position.
The line that got the longest round of applause there in the middle of that speech was when he said that we have to have a situation where Russian killers cannot freely travel the world as if they've done nothing wrong.
And that is a very important line in the context of what's happening today. Because as we noted earlier,
there was that sense, wasn't it, that he was talking to Moscow as much as he was talking to the Dáil or the Oireachtas.
He was also talking to the Trump administration, because the Witkoff...
To the people in Moscow for... Yeah,
the Witkoff-Kushner Kremlin proposal provides for a full amnesty for any Russian over this mass killing and invasion, whether it's just Russian troops or whether it's Vladimir Putin, who, remember, is wanted by the International Criminal Court over the abduction of Ukrainian children. So that Zelensky knows exactly what he's saying there, which is this part of the proposal being discussed in Moscow is absolutely unacceptable. And we need the support from Ireland and from Europe on this. But it was interesting that as he was being introduced by the Konkola, she referred to the need that justice had to be done for Russia as well. So she actually echoed what Zelensky was making in that appeal to justice, or those three words, justice must prevail.
We did hear in speech, Eimear, outside of government buildings that Volodymyr Zelensky said that Russia had tried to annihilate Ukraine with its illegal invasion, and that theme was returned to in the speech there. He said Russia wanted to treat Ukraine as its property, its people as its livestock, and also that effort, he touched on it in government buildings as well, that there had been an agreement signed to set up departments or seats of Ukrainian studies in Irish universities. There is that sense there that this is existential as far as Ukrainian identity and culture is concerned.
I think it is. I think it's absolutely crunch time for Ukraine. And he used really emotive language there. And it was interesting, like, as he was here, you know, shoring up support from European allies, he made efforts there to make Putin seem like the lonely one. He said no one can break the world, not even Russia. And, you know, one man can't stand against the world, basically. You know, and it's interesting that he's making those comments at a time when the US seems to be hugely being influenced by the Kremlin. And you would wonder if Russia is really standing that alone in advancing, you know, its objectives. I think he is trying to appeal to that sense of, you know, Ukraine has the right to self-determination, and he connected that to Ireland's struggle for self-determination as well. So he's definitely making that emotive appeal to people to make sure that they realise what's on the line.
And we can just see him coming down the steps there, accompanied by the Cian Corla, as he makes his way towards the exit of Leinster House after making that speech. Is he right, Scott, in terms of the view that Ukraine has convinced the rest of the world and a community of nations of the righteousness of its cause? Because in some areas of the global south, there is a greater degree of indifference. There's the purchase of Russian oil and not really a shared view that this is the existential struggle of our time.
That's a really interesting question that deserves more examination, because remember that at the start of the Russian invasion, full-scale invasion back in February 2022, not only was there indifference, but many people, say, for example, in India, say, for example, in China, were actually saying, well, you know, it's Russia that's been threatened. They've been pushed into this. Now, in fact, and it's just because I happen to do a lot of work with Indian media, there's been a shift in the Indian attitude, which is more of a questioning of how far Russia has pushed this. Why the Russians continue this invasion going into a fifth year. It doesn't mean they're going to join the EU and other countries in providing financial support to Russia. But there is a questioning of what exactly Putin is doing. And that has been reinforced because, of course, India, China, Turkey now paying the price by the U.S. sanctions that have been placed on the Russian oil.
Is that what's caused the shift?
When you start to pay the price of the fact that if you continue to allow Putin to get away with this, your economy will suffer. Yeah, you rethink this. So 5 of 7 Indian oil companies are not taking any Russian oil this month. Turkey has cut its Russian oil supplies by a third. Does that mean that they're embracing Ukraine? Not necessarily. But it does mean that that space that Putin has, which was the global south will cover me indefinitely. He doesn't have that assurance, just as Zelensky, to be fair, doesn't have that assurance that he's got everyone in the EU behind him when you talk about a Viktor Orban in Hungary or a Robert Fico in Slovakia.
Yeah, he did say, Emer, Europe can't run away from its own values.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I said there, he's really appealing to the idea of, you know, this would be a violation of the human rights of Ukrainian people and a violation of the sovereignty of Ukraine. You know, that's the basis on which he's kind of putting forward, you know, his arguments that this plan can't go ahead, that we need to see modifications. And I do think that there is a lot of support in Europe for that. I mean, I think that a lot, you know, that indifference that you're talking about, we do see that even, you know, represented here in Ireland by some politicians and when you talk to people about this issue. But I think in the majority that there is a lot of support for Zelensky. And you were saying there was a lot of indifference at the start, but he was such a key player in getting people on side and appealing to people in that emotive way that you were speaking about and getting them behind the Ukrainian cause, you know.
That question you were asking though, Katie, about, you know, the accountability and the aggressor, you know, given the US attitude towards the International Criminal Court, the International Court of Justice, you know, The Hague and the many tribunals that it's had with the former Yugoslavia and everything else. Did that stand out to you in terms of how achievable is this?
It did in this speech, because he returned to it and it was the big heart. It was the one he really wanted to drive home. And it came up as well in the press conference with Micheál Martin earlier. It's something that he absolutely wants to put up in lights from his speaking points here today, I think.
I think it's beyond speaking points. And I'm going to refer you to three words that were really community of nations. Now, it used to be, in the post-World War II period, you would hear that phrase coming from American politicians, albeit America leading the world. You would hear it from a lot of European politicians, especially as we moved into the European Union. Here, at a time when the Trump administration doesn't really believe in that community of nations, let's be honest, doesn't believe in alliances, when the EU is being challenged to take the lead to promote the community of nations, when you have to think about a community of nations in relation to, say, to China, here is Zelensky saying this international imperative that we had at 1945, we've got it here 80 years later.
So under what auspices would that tribunal be set up?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, before I get to the tribunal, let me get to something which is fundamental here. Ukraine wants to make sure it gets into the European Union. So when you talk about community of nations, that economic imperative is at the forefront. In terms of the tribunal, look, the only time, it's only losers who have to pay the price for war crimes. whether it be in the International Court of Justice or the International Criminal Court. That is a hard reality, but there is a symbolic point to be made here, that even if Vladimir Putin never loses this, never has to face justice, symbolically, there must be a statement through the international legal system that this is not right. Because if you do not make that symbolic statement, again, taking what Zelensky said, but what the Taoiseach has said, what happens the next time someone wants to carry out an invasion? They'll think they can do so with impunity.
And the fact that, again, coming back to him talking about the global Irish community, he's talking to Irish Americans in particular there. And of course, we had the Ceann Comhairle reminding us of words of John F. Kennedy, managing to mention New Ross.
St. Patrick's Day coming up. The expectation will be there for Ireland to kind of include this in its bilateral meetings, ambassadors, political leaders, as the ministers are sent out around the world.
Yeah, but I think we have been over the last few years. I think Micheál Martin, Simon Harris in other meetings have mentioned that they brought up Ukraine when they have gone to the US, and particularly on St. Patrick's Day. But, you know, Ireland does have limited influence, and then I guess the influence of the EU itself is being called into questions here. Like, you know, when you talk about the community of nations, you know, there is a sense that Donald Trump has thrown out that rule book and that time is over, and that he's the one who's sort of calling the shots here a little bit. And the EU is using every lever it can to put forth its arguments. So I think it's really interesting that he's using that language that harks back to that, you know, post-World War II period that you were talking about.
OK, I think we'll have to leave that there for now. But many thanks for that to Scott Lucas from UCD and Eimear McCauley from thejournal.ie. As I say, we will have more analysis and reporting from that visit today later on in the show. But for now, we will take a break.